So is that where we get the expression, I love you with all my heart?
I think that's better than saying, I love you with all my blood pump.
King David marveled as he wrote to God, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. That was 3,000 years ago. Imagine how much more profoundly he would marvel if he knew as much about the body as today's guest here on Truth in the Test Tube. Dr. Charles L. Weber recently retired from the faculty of Loyola University Medical School in Maywood, Illinois. Shortly before his retirement, he spoke with producer David Fisher.
Today, let's talk about the heart.
Why the heart's so interesting is because it's a system which beats all by itself. If you take the heart outside of the body and put it in a petri dish, it will beat all by itself.
For how long?
Until it runs out of oxygen. So it will go for several minutes. And even when the heart stops beating, it still has an electrical beat to it. If you put electrodes on it, it still will show electrical activity.
Now, you're mentioning that the nervous system and the brain control the other organs of the body.
Absolutely. The heart is connected with sympathetic and parasympathetic nerves, which control its frequency and its force of contraction. So we all have the experience when we exercise, our heart beats faster and it beats stronger. When you're nervous, for example, you can feel the heartbeat throbbing in your chest, and that's a sympathetic nervousness driving the heart to a faster and stronger contraction.
Describe the structure of the heart.
The heart is a hollow muscle. Your biceps muscle is a solid muscle. It doesn't have chambers. The heart has four chambers. It has two atria and two ventricles. So the heart has one way of blood flow. The heart receives blood from the right atrium, coming from the vena cava. That pumps it to the right ventricle. The right ventricle pumps blood through the whole lung system. The lung returns blood to the left atrium. The left atrium pumps blood to the left ventricle. And the left ventricle pumps blood throughout the whole body. The heart is a pump.
The PowerPoint that you have on your screen currently asks the question, is it a pump or is it a soil?
Well, you have to take your 21st century hat off and go back to antiquity. The ancients knew that there was something inside their chest that was beating. You can feel it. They knew that it sent rhythms and pulses through the arterial system, although they didn't understand the flow of blood as a circle. But you can measure the pulse at the radial artery, at your wrist, in your feet, in your neck. You can feel this. So the question is, what is this? What is this? And to the ancients, they said, this must be the soul because it has this vivacious contraction and vitality. It shows life. The heart, which is in there, beats. In ancient literature, when you look at literature, when it refers to the heart, it's not referring to a blood pump because they didn't understand it that way. They understood it as something moving, something vigorous. And so that's why we get, I believe, in antiquity, the concept of a human soul must be in this organ because this is the only thing that's wiggling in there. Kidneys don't wiggle, livers don't wiggle, but the heart's moving.
So is that where we get the expression, I love you with all my heart?
I think that's better than saying, I love you with all my blood pump. I remember years ago, we talked about Dr. Randall as being responsible for getting me into physiology. He was a heart expert, and I remember looking up all the verses on heart in the Bible. There's a lot of them. Go to a concordance and just look all of references on heart. Here's the important point. Most of them do not refer to the heart as a pump. They refer to the heart as the seat of where we live before God.
The seat of the will or the emotions.
Yes, exactly. So that's a good way to do it. In other words, that's a good lesson in how to translate the Bible. Say, heart, oh, that must be the blood pump within my rib space. No. That's not what the psalmist had in mind. But there are other verses, you know, where the heart was pierced by a spear or something like that.
Right.
There are literal things to that, yes.
So what research have you done in your career related to the heart?
I'm interested in biological rhythms, and the heart is certainly a rhythmical structure. So I have studied the heart from the perspective of its electrical activity. See, the heart has two parts to it. It has an electrical system and it has a mechanical system. Think of your car. You have an ignition and you have the mechanics, right? You've got the gears and the motor, but you have that electrical system. signal, which sparks the fuel to give you the power. So I look at the heart rhythm. The idea is this, is if the rhythm is out of rhythm, there's something wrong. And so just like the breathing system we talked about has those phases of breathe in, breathe out, pause. So does the heart. The heart has these three phases: contract, relax, and pause. Wait for the next beat. And that time when the heart is resting is the only time when a pacemaker can find its activity working. So when a patient, an elderly patient, gets a pacemaker put in, the only time it will work when an electrical stimulus comes is when the heart's resting. If the heart's already being contracted by its own signal, the signal you add to it will do nothing.
It'll be ignored.
It'll be absolutely ignored. You know why? The reason is that when the heart contracts, 100% of the heart cells all contract. Every single one, not 98%, not 50%, every single one, 100%. There's a wave that goes over the heart. Parts of it contract sooner than others, but it's sequential. But when you get the heart out of rhythm, what that would mean is you can have ventricular fibrillation. Every part of the heart in ventricular fibrillation of the ventricle is doing its own thing. You get a local contraction at the apex. You get a local contraction at the base. You get a local contraction in the Purkinje system. All these different local contractions, but nobody's talking to anybody else. And this heart can't pump blood. And the way we describe this, and I've seen it in the lab, if you hold a heart which is fibrillating, it feels like a bag of worms. Now think of a bag, think of a baggie, real thin, filled with large worms as they're squirming. What does that feel like? You can feel, you actually feel them. You're protected by the bag, but you feel them. And that's what a fibrillating heart is. Every system is doing its own thing. And so this is a heart out of rhythm.
Now, when the heart is spoken of figuratively in literature, including in the Bible, what can we learn from that as far as analogy with the physical heart?
In the ancient literature, motions of the heart were understood by even Egyptians. For example, if the heart trembles, it has little power and it sinks, then the disease is advancing. This is from a papyrus, Ebers, 1534 BC. What I've written here is this text proves that the ancient Egyptians believed that the heart gave rise to the vessels that lead to different parts of the body, and that the motion of the heart can be felt at different peripheral sites. They recognize that the pulse is an important diagnostic sign linked to cardiac activity. This is deep thinking. This is 1,500 years before Christ. One of my favorites is this idea of the Egyptian weighing of the heart ceremony. Now, at the Field Museum in Chicago, they have this whole display on the weighing of the heart ceremony. And what happens is at death, remember in Egypt, they would embalm the bodies and so forth, but they'd eviscerate them. And part of the evisceration included taking the heart out. And they have the ceremony where they put the heart on a balance, and on the other side you put a feather. If the heart was heavy, it was laden down with sin, and it was a corrupt heart. But if the heart was lighter than the feather, that would mean this is a clean heart. And I just find that fascinating. That's how much respect they gave to the heart, because they knew that there was life in the heart. And they said, well, if the life is in the heart, this must be a place where we're judged. So even the Egyptians had this concept of some kind of a judgment of purity.
Even a millennium and a half before Christ.
Yes.
They had this awareness.
Isn't that amazing? They did not have the Old Testament. They had the fractured image of God within them.
There's a tie-in with Romans 1.
Yes. We have a natural revelation. I believe that God reveals himself through nature, through the stars, in our bodies, which are much more complex than the stars. And yet they had an appreciation that we also carry a sense of guilt. We know when we do something wrong. We don't have to have somebody tell us. We know. In Romans 1, it talks about people who have a knowledge of God by the natural revelation. Many of them don't care to meditate on that, and they cast that aside. Willfully ignorant is a good way to put that. You have a truth before you, say, I don't like that truth. A better question is, why don't I like that truth? Because that will reveal something about me. Why do I not want that truth? What's wrong with this? What's wrong with me is really the question. I don't want to be told what to do.
The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked.
Who really knows how bad it is, writes Jeremiah. That's Jeremiah 17:9. Actually, I think this weighing of the heart ceremony by the Egyptians just reflected that knowledge without really understanding the deeper aspects of it. But to their credit, they had this sense of this religious nature within them, and they're trying to do something about it, trying to find truth. And I believe God honors that and brings truth to them.
Now, some have analyzed the shape of the red corpuscle. It's thinner in the center than it is at the edges. Is that correct?
The shape of the red blood cell is called biconcave, which means on the top and on the bottom, it's punched in, biconcave. Now, this is a critical shape because inside the red blood cell is contained hemoglobin, where oxygen is bound. The biconcave shape of the red blood cell allows the red blood cell to take water in and expand in size, or to have water be expelled and decrease in size without putting a stress on the membrane. So we know that when red blood cells go through the venous circulation, they actually get bigger in the veins because water moves in, so they swell. If a red blood cell was like a BB, perfectly spherical, if it took on water, just take a little bit of water, can you imagine the stress it puts on that membrane? A flat membrane which can expand out, there's no stress in the membrane. So that's good. If you put red blood cells in pure water, by the way, so much water will go in, it will look like a basketball, and it will explode, and the red blood cells will release to the blood hemoglobin. And you know what the hemoglobin will do? It'll flow to the kidney, it'll filter, and it will jam the kidneys. So it's a good thing that hemoglobin is contained within red blood cells.
So it becomes less concave as it takes on.
Of course.
And then becomes more concave as it
discharges. But it's not stressing the membrane because it's like a basketball punched in on the side. It can take on a lot of air without putting stress on the ball itself.
Okay. When you give your lecture on the heart, what is your closing thought?
The Bible starts with, in Leviticus 17, it says, the life of every creature is in its blood. I believe the heart bespeaks life, that heartbeat. Again, I think of the embryo. 10 days after conception, in a little child, that heart's beating. And you can see this with sonograms and other imaging techniques, which is amazing. God has made our hearts, and I think that we can make some parallels between the way the heart works automatically, allowing itself to be controlled by the nerves of the body, as we can spiritually let our hearts be controlled by the Spirit of God and not try and control it ourselves. Not to be that autonomous heart, not to be that heart which is fibrillating ventricle or fibrillating atrium. Let's let the rhythms go smoothly and let God control our hearts. So again, the sense of control doesn't mean you're rigidly fixed. It allows you a flexibility and to live a vital life and to live according to the rules. When we violate the rules, our heart goes out of rhythm, and that's true physically and it's true spiritually.
So we don't want to put a tourniquet on to restrict what God wants us to do.
Exactly.
During the next several episodes, Dr. Weber will share his in-depth knowledge of our various organs and systems. When we're through, we'll know more than King David ever imagined about how wonderfully made you and I really are. We welcome your thoughts about anything that you've heard today. You may email us at truthtest@truthinthetesttube.org. And you may want to bookmark our website so that you can hear new episodes as they become available. We enjoy your company, so please join us regularly here at Truth in the Test Tube.